Welcome to University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. New Mexico had a vibrant Chicano arts movement in the 1970s, particularly around Las Vegas, but very little of it has been documented. Two University of New Mexico professors are working to change that with a new exhibition showcasing six artists and the events that inform their work. There will also be a catalog from UNM Press later this year and a new archive at the Center for Southwest Research. On this episode, I speak with curators Irene Vasquez, chair of the Chicana and Chicano Studies Department and director of the Southwest Hispanic Research Institute, and art history professor Ray Hernandez Duran about the exhibit Voces del Pueblo, Artists of the Levantamiento Chicano in New Mexico. It will be at the National Hispanic Cultural Center through February 8th. Why did you want to curate this show and create this catalog?
I think when we originally discussed the idea, it was strictly an exhibit. And part of that related to conversations with some of the artists who are in the exhibit, including Francisco Lefebvre, conversations involving the lack of representation of specifically what would be Chicano art, but even more specific to art that was produced during the Chicana and Chicano movement. And then as we began working with Professor Ray Hernandez Duran, we saw that there was a need to really try to memorialize it beyond the life of the exhibit. And the idea of the catalog, Ray presented that idea. And we're also working on an archival project related to the exhibit.
Ray, why did Chicano and Chicana artists who remained in New Mexico not receive the same degree of attention as artists in other region of the Southwest or New Mexican artists who left New Mexico?
Wow. I wrote a whole essay about this in the exhibition catalog. There's a lot to say. And in my essay, I tried to approach that exact question for the very first time. I don't think it's really been explored in any kind of significant way. And I'm looking both at the politics in New Mexico and also the politics outside of New Mexico. In terms of the art scene here in New Mexico, as I mentioned in the essay, based on my research, I talk a lot about the tricultural myth, you know, this kind of simplified sort of a framework to identify the major demographics in New Mexico. You know, you have the Pueblo, indigenous native population, you have the Hispano, Spanish, and then you have the Anglo-American. That framework really corresponds to not just the way Anglo-Americans were perceiving the local populations, but also how they were approaching the cultural production. They were collecting indigenous art, then they were collecting what at that time were called Mexicano arts. And then, of course, you have Anglo-Americans, the Anglo-American artists coming in who were seen as introducing modern art, modernity. These collections become then the foundations for the first museums. If you look at the major arts institutions, they foreground these three different cultural groups. There is kind of a fourth branch to this that's contemporary art that develops a little later that's a bit more diverse. But if you look at the main museums in Santa Fe and Taos, they really reflect that history. And when you think about that framework as sort of the determinant for what is collected as New Mexican art, where do the Chicanos fit? You know, Chicanos foreground their indigenous identity, but many Native Americans here, like, you know, there's some issues, there's some tensions with some of the local indigenous populations in terms of Chicanos identifying as indigenous. So they don't quite fit there. And then because they foreground indigeneity, the Spanish identified Hispanos have issues. Many of them have been anti-Chicano. You know, they foreground Spain and their colonial history, and these are exactly the kinds of things that a lot of the Chicano ideology kind of critiques, rightfully. It's anti-colonial, it's anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist. And then they're not Anglo, they're not white. So they pertain to one of these earlier cultures, so they're not seen as participating in the modern kind of developments here. So if this structure shapes these collections, where do the Chicanos fit? You know, they're not really seen as New Mexican. They don't have a presence here like they do, for example, in California, which dominates the discussion. And that's the second part of the answer. So that's New Mexico. And outside of this, when you look at Chicano art history, California is very centered. I remember one of the artists, Juanita Lavadi, she's the master weaver in the group. She told me that years ago she was in a show with other Chicana artists. I think most of them were from California. And one of them had asked her, like, where are you from? She was like, New Mexico. She's like, oh, there was no Chicano movement movement there, you don't really make Chicano art there. You know, there's this kind of perception of New Mexico as kind of the boonies, you know, provincial, rural. That, I think, helps start to kind of explain why in places like California, it's like they really don't look east at the movement as it unfolded over here.
Yeah. What have we been missing by not necessarily knowing this history and these artists?
New Mexico's art history is so well documented, especially after 1848, during the territorial period, which starts in the 1850s through statehood in the early 20th century. One of the primary interests has been local cultural production, indigenous, Mexicano, Hispano. That has been one of the draws. You know, there were anthropologists from the Smithsonian, there scientists, I mean, even tourists. I mean, the arts were used to draw both tourism and settlers. You know, so the arts are so centered in almost every official representation of New Mexican history and culture. This is a gap. You know, everyone knows santos and bultos, and they know textiles and ceramics. And then when we get to like the 60s and 70s, the civil rights movements of the mid-20th century are pivotal events in U.S. history. And we participate in that, of course. We're part of the U.S., and there's a movement here that participates in the larger civil rights developments that we see. But in terms of the art history, there's this gap, and people don't know what New Mexicans were doing during this period. It's like a blind spot. That's how one of the Chicano art historians described this to me. It's like New Mexico is a blind spot during this early period of the movement. It really hasn't been documented or studied. So that leaves a gap in this much larger story, and it's a very important item of information to really understand the full history of cultural production in this region and how it pertains not just to American history, but American civil rights movements, American political movements, etc.
How did you all choose the artists?
When we first started, we looked to artists who were very publicly either self-identified or identified as Chicana or Chicano. And we were looking at materials that were produced in the 70s and 80s. We wanted an exhibit that highlighted the work of less than a dozen. Eventually it becomes six, because there was so much to tell. There was so much to tell about the history of that period, the types of production, the impact, the messages. And so we went with a smaller number and vetted them through different artists and looked at the production itself.
Most of them were students at New Mexico Highlands University. And I was like, that's the core. We'll focus on those artists that were New Mexico Highlands University students in the early 70s. And another thing that this group had in common is that most of them had worked with Pedro Rodriguez, who was the first professor of Chicano studies hired at New Mexico Highlands University. He wasn't there very long. He got fired 2 years after he got hired for causing waves because he was politicizing the students and the administration didn't like that.
Why was Pedro Rodriguez so controversial?
Well, Pedro Rodriguez, he got hired at NMHU in 1971 to be the inaugural director of Chicano studies. Based on the materials that I found, I don't think they expected that he was going to be sort of serving as a catalyst for a student movement on campus. You know, I think they thought he was going to teach his courses in art history and call it a day. And the students, of course, given what was taught back then, knew European artists. They knew Renaissance artists, Baroque artists. They knew nothing about Latin America or Mexican art or Chicano art. But he taught them this material, and then he even sent them down to Mexico City, where they were exposed to the ancient sites, the museums, other collections. They worked with a muralist, Ramiro Roma Estrada, and they began to understand how their homeland fit into the larger hemispheric stage of the Americas. They came back politicized. Then they started painting murals on campus. And these murals were highlighting some of these central ideas of the Chicano, the indigenous history, sort of images that really foregrounded women that were anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist. The administration, which was primarily Anglo and some Hispanos, were very, they didn't like that. They described him as a troublemaker. You know, so he was summarily dismissed. He did, you know, stand his ground and fight back, but he wound up leaving, and he got a tenure-track job in Washington, in the Northwest, Washington State University in Pullman, where he worked until he retired. After retiring in 1980, that's when he went back home to San Antonio and founded these organizations and became the executive director of what's known as the Guadalupe Art Center.
And we have to remember in this period that you have tensions between students and community members who are advocating for more representation in terms of curriculum, faculty, administration, not only in institutions of higher education, but K through 12. And there's great turmoil, right? There are student walkouts that are happening across the country where students are demanding, right, an environment where they're recognized, they're respected, their languages can be spoken, they can be represented in the teaching matter of the schools. And some of the institutions respond, you know, like, yes, let's bring someone in. But what begins to happen is that art becomes a great motivator of politics. And the art is used, of course, in murals, but it's also used on posters. Mm-hmm. And it encompasses songs and it encompasses dance. And so there's a greater cultural representation that's synergized by politics, and it becomes too public, right?
And critical.
And the image of Che Guevara, right?
Yes.
That just sparks a reaction. And it's like, enough is enough.
This is University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamarick. I'm speaking with the curators of a new show on Chicano and Chicana art called Voces del Pueblo, UNM professors Irene Vasquez and Ray Hernandez Duran. You made a video with some of these artists. Their murals were painted over.
Yeah, well, Noel Marquez, he's one of the artists. I mean, he was a master. He passed away. He was still alive when we started planning the exhibit, and I feel very fortunate that we had the chance to do a studio visit at his home down in Lake Arthur by Roswell in southeastern New Mexico. And he had been dealing with debilitating disease that he attributed to the contamination in the environment caused by the oil refineries in that part of the state. And he had devoted his life to environmental activism. When we visited him and I interviewed him, he was telling us that he was one of the students that went to Mexico. When he came back, the first mural they painted was at Highlands High School. And then the next mural was on campus. And one of the faculty members who eventually became university president, I think his name was Gilbert Sanchez, his last name was Sanchez, complained about this because he was under pressure. Apparently, the state government got involved. The Speaker of the House at the time, he was a Republican politician, I can't remember his name, was pressuring Sanchez to whitewash the murals or else they would cut funding to the university.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, I mean, this rippled, not just across the campus, but outside the campus.
It's because of the political nature of the murals or because they were representing Chicano culture, or can I not separate those two, really?
All of it.
Okay.
It's all of the above.
Yeah, because the mural, you know, they're mocking the administration for being, you know, so heavy-handed in terms of how are student activists being treated, what are the decisions around curriculum, what are the types of programs that are being funded. The critical lens begins to turn, right, from the international and national to the local. What is happening in Las Vegas at that time that feels oppressive, and it becomes reflected on the walls. And I'm sure, you know, to a certain extent, people felt personally insulted rather than seeing this as sort of a part of the times. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, a resistance to keeping the murals up, and they were whitewashed.
Now, something that you mentioned a while ago is that when Pedro was dismissed, that set off the bomb. It was incendiary.
Okay. Yeah, I bet.
There were protests, demonstrations, sit-ins, walkouts. The students were demanding the hiring of Chicano faculty, mm-hmm. of administrators, et cetera, more support for their programs. And the content, as Irene was touching upon, the content of the artwork, like the murals, was exactly the kind of content, historically and culturally, that they felt was not being taught.
You have the show divided into four sections. Can you talk about that and how these very different artists embody the idea of Chicano, Chicana culture?
When we were looking at everything that we had, which is a little bit random. Remember, we had to work with what they had. You know, some of these artists had not kept their artwork. They had sold it, didn't know who had it. There were some challenges in terms of trying to put together a checklist of objects for the show. But so we had to work with what they had at their disposal. And then once we had to go through it, of course, there are issues of, like, you know, quality checks, what's exhibitable, what's not exhibitable. We had the final body of work. And then we got the layout of the galleries from the National Hispanic Culture Center. So, of course, things have to be organized according to the spatial limits of the exhibition space. The work kind of just grouped naturally when you kind of look at everything. It was interesting to me. The work's just kind of grouped along certain themes, and these themes reflected these interests that were very uniquely New Mexican. We do have in the first gallery that's painted yellow has documentary photographs. It was later in the working on the show that it turned out there were documentary images. Adelita Medina, who was the journalist, she was the primary photographer for most, if not all, of these images. So I thought it would be important to have documentary photographs to provide some context of the events that were unfolding during that period, which it's these things that really shaped the art that was made. So yeah, some of the works were more political than others. So those seemed to kind of group together. And they reflected the principles or tenets of the Chicano movement. Then we have all this landscape imagery, and that's unique to New Mexico. The landscape here is not just a resource of seasonal work or whatnot. It's a foundation for all people who live here. Given the nature of life here, people are herders, they're subsistence farmers, etc. They make their living, their life. It's the foundation for life. It's the foundation for culture and community and traditions. So I was like, we need to have a gallery under the term querencia, which is a term in Spanish that New Mexicans really use to describe that bond they have with the land. So the land clearly had to be a theme because it was so present. And then New Mexico is known for its unique cultural production. The weavings are amazing. You start with the indigenous traditions and then what settlers brought in and then later the Anglo-American. I mean, it's like such a rich fusion. There's a lot of cultural cross-pollination given the diverse communities that come into contact and live next to each other. There's miscegenation, intermarrying. There's cultural borrowing across the board. And what we call New Mexican art today is a product of this very rich, complex history. So it seemed like some of the works lent themselves to a gallery where we could focus, especially with the weavings. I mean, those are really the anchors for this gallery. So we have the weavings in that gallery, references to architecture, sort of religion, et cetera, et cetera. And then we had portraits. Nacho Jaramillo is the primary portraitist.
So, I loved his work.
Yeah, I really wanted to have the portraits under the term El Pueblo at the end. And because I've said before, a lot of people who, these are known figures. Many of the people who are painted are members of the community. So I remember at the opening, people were like, oh, I know him. I know her.
That's cool.
And then before the opening, they had their staff. Once the show was installed, they told me later that they had their staff, who are mostly Hispano, walk to the show and they loved that gallery. That was intentional. I want the visitor to look at these portraits, maybe recognize these people and understand that they're part of this. It's about them. They're part of the conversation. They're part of this community.
One important objective early on that we identified was really complicating the idea of what is Chicano movement art. You know, we tend to think of the different murals and paintings that underscore, you know, the UFW, the Crusade
United
for
Farm
Justice.
Workers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what we found with these artists is what they all had in common is they all contributed toward those murals at Highlands. They were involved in going to Mexico to study with masters, and they all had their great strengths. So you see the works that are very much like Las Realidades en Nuevo México, workers' rights, mining, the destruction of the local environment, racism. You see that, you know, you feel that in that painting. And when you look at the landscape or even the self-portraits, you are still compelled, I think, by the spirit of those works. In particular, when you look at the landscape, people's relationship to land. Land supports life. The everyday beauty, right, of living in New Mexico. And the same thing, you know, with the self-portraits. I mean, they're almost dreamlike when you look at them. And different types of faces, different types of representations, you know, really complicating who are Nuevo Mexicanas, who are Nuevo Mexicanos. We had a second objective of engaging community in the process of the exhibit and the catalog. And so we worked with Robert F. Kennedy High School to paint a community mural led by high school students and muralist Francisco Lefebvre. It's a beautiful mural, imagine. And the students decide to paint themselves, you know, in this backdrop of things that are important to them.
Juanita Lavadi has, as you say, amazing weaver. She has this really interesting painting called Tejiendo el Rio Grande, where the hands seem to be weaving directly out of the landscape.
That painting really captures a lot of what the show is about. Her hands are actually weaving the landscape. You see motifs, they're like these zigzag elements that appear to come from indigenous visual vocabularies. That painting has so much in it. about the land, about cultural production, about traditional arts, about the cross-pollination between pre-existing populations and settlers. To me, that's one of the more powerful pieces in the show, precisely because it kind of points not just to Juanita's practice as a weaver, but her late husband was very much involved in the Taos Acequia Valley Association. So the acequia, very important to New Mexicans, going back to this importance of the land and farming and herding. The land is what provides food. It's what provides the materials for cultural production, like the wool that is so important in weaving. And I think Juanita is touching upon all these things in this image that really points to the relationship between humans and the natural environment, but also the responsibility humans have to sustain and protect the environment. And in turn, the environment provides all the elements that are necessary for life and for artistic production, cultural production, and the traditions that we now identify as New Mexican.
And I think one other aspect of the painting is that Juanita learned that through her women's lineage back. And so it also demonstrates ancestral culture and knowledge and how women are such an integral part of ensuring that those traditions continue, that they're celebrated, that they're recognized, that they're used to bring community together. And I think that we see that, you know, in the work of the women artists centering community well-being.
Yeah, that's such an important point. I mean, the importance of women, not just in historical cultural traditions, but even in the movimiento. You know, the women were prominent leaders. I mean, the women mentioned Roberta Marquez, for instance, when I interviewed her. She was talking about, for the first time, you know, she grew up in a traditional community family. For the first time at MHU, she saw women taking leadership positions, like Adelita. Adelita was a leader. She was a journalist. She was the photographer. There was a newspaper, El Grito, that was started. It was all staffed by women. Mm. They were the ones running it.
You are listening to University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with UNM professors Irene Vasquez and Ray Hernandez Duran about the new show they have curated, Voces del Pueblo, Artists of the Levantamiento Chicano in New Mexico. I loved one of the posters in the exhibit says the physical and imagined peripheral relationship to this region, to major cities in central Mexico and later the U.S. East Coast, maintained the area's status as a province in the eyes of Mexican and later Anglo-American elites. However, to local communities, New Mexico is a center and everything else is peripheral to the world they inhabited, knew, and revered. How does that show up in their work?
One of the things that has worked against states like New Mexico, as well as Texas and Arizona, is that they have been perceived from sort of official nationalistic perspectives as provinces, as frontiers. You know, throughout the colonial period, this was a northern province. Mexico City is the center. And that continues into the Mexican period. And then from the Anglo-American U.S., which is from the East Coast, West, this was also a frontier, especially after 1848. That is based on fact to some extent, but it also has done disservice to the larger perceptions of this region and how its peoples have been approached, how its cultural production has been approached, conceived of, written about, exhibited. To the people living here, this was their homeland. And one other thing that's interesting to me about New Mexico is that these artists all come from multi-generation families. You know, it's very different from like Texas or California. We have a lot of more recent immigrants. It's very Mexico-identified. But here we have a different history because some of these communities go back and predate the U.S. You know, some of these communities were here before the Pilgrims even arrived. You know, so there's a very different kind of memory here. And that inflects. You see it in the art.
And if we look at the work of Noel Marquez, you clearly can see it situated right in the Roswell-Artesia area. I mean, he'll combine images of, you know, oil rig machinery, right, with a beautiful natural landscape. People from the area know it's representing, right, the local history and context and struggles. He has people who are workers represented in such dignified ways that local people respond to in a large public mural. The types of plants that are used, they're very much situated in the local area, and they speak to both racism and exploitation, but the perseverance and dignity of the local communities.
Yeah, and one of the things you just said that made me think about the fact that even just talking about New Mexico, there's variation across the state. Northern New Mexico is very different from Southeast, from Southwest. And Noel Marquez, when I interviewed him, he was like, no, I was the only kid from the Southeast. Like, the rest of them were from the northern parts of New Mexico. So their experiences were very different than his. He considered himself sort of an outlier in relationship to his classmates because he came from the Southeast, where it's different. And if you look at the painting, I mean, the largest painting in the show is his, La Tierra, the Earth. And it kind of...
That was fascinating. Yeah, you have, it reflects. Chinas, yeah. You have oil refineries, right. A Spanish galleon... Cow.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot going on.
No,
there.
If you look at the way he composes it, I mean, he's really working from the triculture myth. Mm-hmm. You have the native, the Hispano, and then the Anglo-American. And he's an environmental activist. So he's really taking to task the contamination and pollution, including the nuclear testing that was really a result of Anglo-American occupation. The upper left, you have landscape. That's familiar to southeastern New Mexico. And he identifies the indigenous dancers that are indigenous to that part of the state. And then you have the Hispanos who are farmers, and there's a church in the background. And then the Anglo-American section, which at the bottom, that's where you see the factories, an 18-wheeler that's
driven by a skeleton.
Right, it's radioactive. You know, that really a complicated history that hasn't been addressed sufficiently, in my opinion, and many others, in terms of the needs of the people that are affected. Those are the things that are in this work. You know, so just talking about New Mexico, there's variation depending on what part of New Mexico you're looking at. So the exhibition is the anchor. Then we produce the catalog, which is not just a document of the exhibition, but it expands the conversation. And we wanted to open it up to include other artists. I'm hoping that this inspires other people to do the research because other curators, scholars could work with the same artists and say completely different things about them. This is only the first step. It's not the final word. So I'm hoping this inspires other people to come and work on this because there's more work to be done just on these artists. But then there are other artists in Las Vegas. There's Albuquerque, Santa Fe, other cities. So there's so much more work to be done. Then there's the calendar of events. In total, there are 9 events. 2 of them have already occurred. And then there's the archive. I talked to my friends at the libraries and I asked them, do we have any kind of collections or anything? They're like, no, we don't have anything. There's no archive like this. So I was like, can we start an archive? Because then the artists all have things. They have newspaper clippings, they have photos, they have all these documents. And a couple of them had expressed concerns, like what's going to happen to all this, you know, when I die, you know? And I was like, this is material that needs to be preserved for future research. The Center for Southwest Research is going to be the home for this collection that we're going to be building over the years with documents, photographs, letters. So future researchers have something to consult.
Yeah. I want to emphasize how this project has really been the result of great community collaboration. And I think it's a model for how UNM can engage. You know, we had graduate students who helped us on early on with the research. Mm-hmm. We had community members and artists who were informing the selection of artists. You know, the thematics, and then we had legislators who helped provide funding because the project was spread out over a number of years. And then we had faculty who were lending their research expertise and the scholarship that's produced. So we were really able to draw on all of the elements of the university, but at every level engage with community artists. And so it's been a really wonderful project.
Yeah, and this includes, of course, other local institutions in the city. I mean, we're based at UNM, Chicano Studies, Southwest Hispanic Research Institute, the Art Department, the Department of Spanish and Portuguese. The Albuquerque Museum is going to be the venue for a panel discussion on muralism that Ida and will be moderating in several weeks. Then the National Hispanic Culture Center, they provided a lot of funding. These things are expensive. So it truly was a communal effort across UNM, across the city, including the politicians and the private collectors. It really was communal, and it belongs to the community. It's about the community.
That was chair of the Chicana and Chicano Studies Department, Erin Vasquez, and art history professor Ray Hernandez Duran, curators of Voces del Pueblo, artists of the Levantamiento Chicano in New Mexico. The show will be at the National Hispanic Cultural Center through February 8, 2026. Find a link to upcoming events around the exhibit at KUNM.org. That's also where you can find all episodes of University Showcase. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music, and thanks for listening to University Showcase here on KUNM.